I think a chronological reading of Lewis's poetry offers a fascinating insight into his growth as a poet and perhaps as a writer as well.
I'm William O'Flaherty, and you're listening to All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. Thanks for joining me. Today's guest is someone I've had on the show before, Dr. Don King, a professor of English at Montreat College in North Carolina. He is also a respected authority on the poetry of C.S. Lewis. So it comes as no surprise that the program today is about that topic. He has edited a book entitled The Collected Poems of C.S. Lewis, A Critical Edition, that is just out at the time of this recording, the fall of 2014. A little bit later, I'll be mentioning what past materials I've chatted with him about. We'll also take a look ahead about what he has in the near future. But for now, let me welcome him back to the show. Welcome back to All About Jack, Don.
Thank you so much for having me, William. It's a pleasure to chat with you again.
Well, now, there are those who hear the name of Lewis and the subject of poetry together, and they scratch their heads. Some don't even know or notice he wrote any poems, and then others who do might say, who cares because of all the great prose works he has? How would you reply to that?
I think many casual readers of Lewis don't know that he spent the first 2.5 decades of his life working hard to turn himself into a great poet. In fact, his first two published volumes were volumes of poetry, Spirits in Bondage in 1919 and Dimer in 1926. When Spirits in Bondage came out, it was right after he had served in the trenches during World War I. When he came back to Oxford and continued his studies, he threw himself into writing more poetry. His friend Owen Barfield, in fact, said that anyone that knew Lewis as a young man in the early 1920s knew that his ruling passion, this is a quote from Barfield, was to become a great poet. At that time, Barfield says, if you thought of Lewis, you automatically thought of poetry. So since Lewis spent the first 2.5 decades of his life trying to become a great poet, I think it's worth our time to look at his poetry and examine it carefully. It's true that Lewis will always be best known for his prose, and yet I think an informed perspective on Lewis as a poet will help us in our understanding of his poetry. So let me just expand on that a little bit. I think knowing more about Lewis as a poet certainly has important biographical implications. I've already mentioned Spirits in Bondage and Dimer, and those two early volumes offer a great insight into Lewis's life as a non-believer. Lewis would have said at that time that he was an atheist. In Spirits in Bondage, for instance, he explores how the spirit of humankind, and in that work he portrays humankind as either proud and indomitable or longing for beauty. How that humankind is shackled by a kind of earthly existence, one marked by suffering and theological uncertainty. So throughout those poems in that little volume, we see Lewis disturbed, really bothered by his sense that human life is controlled by a malicious, capricious God. And his theological dilemma is even more evident in Dimer. As Barfield again says, in Dimer, it's practically the only place where the voice of the earlier Lewis, before his conversion to Christ, is heard speaking not through the memory of the later Lewis, but one could say in his own person. And again, that's Barfield. Perhaps more important than those biographical considerations with regard to his poetry, certainly his desire to be a poet influences prose. In fact, I argue in my book, C.S. Lewis Poet, The Legacy of His Poetic Impulse, that I published in 2001, I argued that Lewis's greatest poetry is probably found in his prose. So Lewis's efforts to become a poet influenced the great prose that he wrote. For instance, I'll just invite your listeners to think about the poetic prose of Perelandra, the second book in Lewis's space trilogy. Seems to me that throughout that book, and really in Out of the Silent Planet, and perhaps to a lesser degree in That Hideous Strength, Lewis's prose often works like poetry. And we pick up in that prose on a certain kind of rhythm and cadence that he develops in his prose that I think is inspired at least in part by his poetic sensibilities. You could also look at books like Mere Christianity and the Problem of Pain. I think they, too, are inspired at least by Lewis's poetic sensibilities. While A Grief Observed demonstrates that Lewis's prose imagery is also inspired by his poetic imagination. So I think there's all kinds of reasons, biographical and literary reasons, for looking at Lewis's poetry more closely. Now, some would argue that because Lewis wasn't a modernist in the tradition of T.S. Eliot and William Butler Yeats, his poetry really puts him at odds with what was going on in the literary scene, certainly in terms of modernism. But I think the poet Malcolm Guite has reflected with great insight on that particular issue. This is Malcolm Guite. Here's what he says about Lewis's poetry. Lewis has sometimes been dismissed as archaic and eccentric, but in retrospect, his efforts in poetry, as in other fields, are much more contemporary, much more keenly directed to the crises of modernity than he's been given credit for. There are many and complex links between his work and that of his two great contemporaries, Yeats and Eliot. Guite goes on to say, he is not perhaps a great poet in the same sense that they are, but he's a great deal better than the long neglect of his verse would imply. There's an internal coherence between all his efforts in every field. Taken together, these efforts constitute an attempt at the redemptive reintegration of reason and imagination, the broken modes of our being and knowing. His poetry thus deserves to be reread, more widely studied, and anthologized. And again, that's Malcolm Guite. And I completely agree with Malcolm. Since I first encountered Lewis's poetry more than 30 years ago, I've been fascinated by his verse. Initially, my interest was confined to exploring yet another expression of Lewis's wide-ranging facility for writing in multiple literary genres. Eventually, however, I came also to appreciate how Lewis's poetry comments on, informs, and reflects key aspects of what Guite calls his attempt at the redemptive reintegration of reason and imagination. And I could go on, but I think I better stop.
Well, now, your book, again, is called The Collected Poems of C.S. Lewis, A Critical Edition. And there have been some earlier collections of C.S. Lewis's poetry that were edited by Walter Hooper, one out in 1994, and he did an earlier one in 64. Now, the one more recent is listed in biographies as the Collected Poems of C.S. Lewis, although if you look at a copy that was only released in England, if someone can get a hold of the out-of-print one, it does just say poems on the cover. So it can be somewhat confusing. Nevertheless, that last one is collecting Lewis's poetry, but how is your book essentially different or similar to what Hooper has previously offered?
Okay, let me comment about the 1994 collected poems that Hooper put out. That volume actually contains his volume that he published in 1964 entitled Poems, and he also includes in the 1994 poems Spirits in Bondage, that was published initially in 1919, and then he includes about 17 other poems that he had found in various places. So the collected poems, again, that he published in 1994 includes poems that first came out in 1964, Spirits in Bondage in 1919, and this miscellany of other poems. So the difference between that book and my book that's come out now is that I think my book really is the collected poems of C.S. Lewis. It contains about 95% of Lewis's original poems. So it's not the complete poems, but instead the collected poems. I decided to omit a number of poetic fragments and a few minor poems. And of course, there's always the possibility that a heretofore unknown Lewis poem of significance may be discovered. And I've also not included Lewis's translation of portions of Virgil's Aeneid. There's another volume that's come out that contains that.
How is your book actually arranged, and why did you structure it the way that you did?
The main way that I structured the book was chronologically. In other words, I tried to find Lewis's poems and arrange them in chronological order. I think a chronological reading of Lewis's poetry offers fascinating insight into his growth as a as a poet and perhaps as a writer as well. In the initial poems that we have in the collected poems, we see Lewis offering poetic retellings of Norse myths in the narrative style of Virgil and Milton. Then we see a rush of lyrics concerning nature's beauty, human suffering, and God's disconnection with both. And many of the latter poems are hard-edged ones that reflect, I think, the influence of Lewis's great tutor, W.T. Kirkpatrick. After this, we see Lewis's 10-year commitment to writing what he hoped would be his opus magnum, Dimer. After the publication of Dimer and his realization that he probably would never be recognized as a great poet, Lewis wrote a collection of 16 lyrics that he included in The Pilgrim's Regress, which was published in 1933, the first book that he wrote after his conversion. These 16 lyrics, I think, are among Lewis's best poems. From this point forward until his death in 1963, Lewis continued writing and publishing poems. Often these poems appeared in journals and magazines under the pseudonym N.W., which was Lewis's Anglo-Saxon shorthand for Nat Welk, or I Know Not Whom. These latter poems are occasional verse, I call them, or burlesques. Sometimes they're erudite satire. Sometimes they're contemplative or religious poems. And in them, Lewis muses on the human condition, pain, suffering, pride, meaning, and the spiritual life. And then at the end of his life, and after the death of Joy Davidman, his wife, we find a small group of poems marking the apex of his career as a poet, including three sonnets almost certainly dealing with Joy's cancer and subsequent death. So I think a chronological reading of Lewis's poetry offers a broad overview of his work as a whole. For instance, the angry poet who blasphemes God in De Profundis from Spirits in Bondage is also the Christian writer of allegory tracing his journey to faith in The Pilgrim's Regress. The frustrated narrative poet who writes Dimer is also the imaginative novelist who writes the Ransom Space trilogy. The self-doubting poet in The Apologist's Evening Prayer is also the buoyant, confident Christian apologist of Mere Christianity. The world-weary poet who writes Scholar's Melancholy is the same perspective scholar who writes English literature in the 16th century, excluding drama. The nature poet who laments the future of Foresty is also the fantasy novelist who writes of the apocalyptic destruction of Narnian nature in the last battle. The ironic poet who worries about the deconstruction of language in the country of the blind is also the penetrating philosopher who writes The Abolition of Man. The mythopoeic poet who writes The Queen of Drum is also the realistic novel who writes Till We Have Faces. And finally, the tender poet who writes Loves as Warm as Tears is the same broken-hearted writer of the memoir A Grief Observed.
Some people may think editing a book of another person's work is pretty simple. Was this the case for you? And if not, what were some of the challenges?
I think an editor's job is going to change given the particular material that he or she is working with. I've edited several other books, and I think editing Lewis's poems was very similar to those experiences and yet different as well. In general, I think an editor, first of all, has to know how to negotiate. And what I mean by that is when you try to work with the published material and in particular the unpublished material of a writer, you have to work with the holder of the copyright. And sometimes that's a very delicate process of negotiation that you have to go through. You also have to be able to navigate and uncover, in the case of this book, poems that had never been published before. You have to discern which poems are really worth publishing. Sometimes, as I've already suggested, I've had to leave out some in this book. Of course, you have to be able to collate different versions of poems. And I will add here that the collected poems of C.S. Lewis, a critical edition, this is not intended to be the complete poems of Lewis, nor is it intended to be a variorum edition. A variorum edition would publish all versions of a single poem. So I don't try to do that. I think that's for the next generation of Lewis scholars. And then perhaps overall, you have to maintain the integrity of the corpus of the writer. And I think all of those things go into editing a book, and certainly much more than that. I think as I think about my work as an editor and then as a writer myself, it just takes a long time to work out a scholarly book like the Collected Poems of C.S. Lewis. In one of the other books that I edited, I spent 17 years collecting the material before the book finally came to print. So I think an editor, a literary scholar, to me, they tend to have to combine the skills of a mystery novelist, one involved in a scavenger hunt, and then also one who is engaged in a crossword puzzle. All of those kinds of skills, I think, are important when it comes to putting together a book like the Collected Poems of any writer. And I would also like to thank Walter Hooper for his assistance. In fact, I dedicated the Collected Poems of C.S. Lewis to Walter Hooper. He's done a wonderful job over his many years as Lewis's literary executor. And as I was working on the Collected Poems, there were several poems that I was not able to access anywhere else except through the files that Hooper maintains. And in every instance where I asked for Walter's help, he was very gracious. And so I dedicated the book to him not only because of the help he gave me in this particular book, but out of recognition for the great work that he's done over the years as Lewis's literary executor.
Well, since we're talking about Lewis's poems, would you share maybe a few of your favorites by Lewis and then say why you enjoy them so much?
Sure. I've selected a few that sort of cover the gamut of Lewis's life. The first poem is a sonnet that Lewis wrote that really hasn't been accessible to very many people until now. And the reason I'm going to read this one is because it shows how, as a young man, he was so dedicated to writing poetry. So this is a sonnet. The first line is, "I have not bowed in any other shrine." And in effect, this is a poem to poesy, to poetry, to the muse of poetry. So Lewis writes in this sonnet, "I have not bowed in any other shrine from babyhood, nor sought another god to worship, and with faithless footsteps trod in any flower-strewn path, save only thine, dear poesy. Not palace's love divine, nor red Lias with his ivied rod, nor Ares with his stern feet brazen shod to crush, no Aphrodite's maddening wine have turned me back from following after thee, and suing still thy flying tracks of song. If but for some curt season thou mayest be gracious of heart to him that wooed thee long, and grant the lowliest burden of my cry to make one worthy song before I die." So that poem, written in the summer of 1916, when Lewis was 18 years old, suggests the passion that he had as a young man to write great poetry and to be recognized for it as well. So the next poem I want to read to you is from Pilgrim's Regress. And in this poem, we see Lewis, who's now, I think, a believer, struggling with the demands of faith, and there's a longing to go back to his pagan days. This is, "You rest upon me all my days. You rest upon me all my days, the inevitable eye, dreadful and undeflected as the blaze of some Arabian sky, where, dead still, in their smothering tent, pale travelers crouch, and, bright about them, noon's long-drawn astonishment hammers the rocks with light. Oh, but for one cool breath in seven, one air from the northern climes, the changing in the castle-clouted heaven of my old pagan times. But you have seized all in your rage of oneness, round about, beating my wings, always within your cage. I flutter, but not out." And I think we see there Lewis's perception of God as being a very jealous God confining him, if you will, within a cage. And even though Lewis suggests in this poem that he's beating his wings trying to get out of that cage, there's also a kind of acquiescence to this very powerful, inevitable eye, as Lewis suggests.
Let's pause for a moment from discussing the collected poems of C.S. Lewis, a critical edition, and note a couple of other times when you were on my show to discuss Plain to the Inward Eye and another title, Out of My Bone. Because it's not very obvious what these books are about, let's have you briefly remind the listeners what type of titles they are.
Plain to the Inward Eye is a collection of essays that I've written on Lewis and others over about a 30-year period. And in 2013, we had the 50th anniversary of Lewis's death. It seemed to me that that might be a good time to pull together those essays that I'd written over that 30-year period. So that's what Plain to the Inward Eye is. Out of My Bone is actually the collected letters of Joy Davidman. And that was a wonderful project that I really enjoyed doing. If your listeners haven't read Joy's letters, it's really important that they do if they want to know more about perhaps why Lewis ended up falling in love with her. She's a fascinating woman.
Exactly. Those are very good books. And I'll have links in the show notes here for this interview for people to be able to learn some more. Of course, we encourage them to go ahead and directly pick those up as well. Well, let's go from past books to upcoming or future books related to Lewis. What do you have planned?
Next year, I have two books coming out on Joy Davidman. One is basically the collected poems of Joy Davidman. But I think what is so interesting about this book is that we're going to be publishing about 200 poems of Joy's that have never appeared before. And of much interest to your listeners is an amazing sequence of 45 love sonnets that Joy wrote to Lewis. These poems have never been published before. In fact, we didn't know they existed until about 4 years ago. And I think your listeners will be fascinated by Joy's pursuit, I guess you would have to say, of Lewis as evidenced in these sonnets. The second book is a book that I've written that's a critical study of Joy as a writer. She published two novels. I've already mentioned poems. She was quite active in her communist days as a writer for the New Masses, the semi-official publication of the Communist Party of the United States of America. And she also wrote a nonfiction book entitled Smoke on the Mountain. It's her interpretation of the Ten Commandments. This is a book I've been working on for about 10 years, so it will be coming out next year. And I'm really excited about both of them.
Excellent. And then, of course, if people are listening to this at a later date than when we release it, you're referring to 2015. Right. It might actually already be out if someone's listening to it much later. Mm-hmm. Well, now, let's go ahead and return to the collected poems of C.S. Lewis, a critical edition. As someone not very familiar with Lewis's poetry, I was interested in something called Early Poems, English Verses Made by C.S. Lewis. Can you tell us what this is and why you included it in this volume?
Yes, the short answer to this is that Early Poems is the unpublished manuscript that contains 56 poems or fragments dating from about 1915 to 1919. 25 of the poems that appear in this unpublished manuscript, Early Poems, appear in whole or in part in revised form in Spirits in Bondage. So since we don't have a manuscript version of Spirits in Bondage, this little work, Early Poems, is critically important because we can go to it and see those initial versions of Spirits in Bondage. Of course, the other poems in Early Poems are important. And again, they show us much about Lewis the Young Poet. So I've included them in the collected poems of C.S. Lewis.
Well, as we wrap up, Don, let me have you share where people can find you online and then have you share some final words to offer for those not sure about getting a copy of the collected poems of C.S. Lewis.
Sure. I have a webpage off of the college's website. So if anybody type into your browser, Mondrake College, go to faculty and find me. You can link to my webpage there and all of the titles that I've published are on the web page, and you can just click on the title itself and it'll take you to the publisher or to Amazon, whatever the choices are. For people who might be wondering whether or not purchasing the collected poems of C.S. Lewis is a good idea for them, I would just suggest a few things. I think it would be very interesting for those who love Lewis's poetry to be able to read alongside the prose the poems that he was writing at the same time. I think that's pretty fascinating. And I think that having this volume is important because it illustrates the degree to which writing poetry and being a poet were fundamental to Lewis's character. As a young man, he saw himself in the great tradition of the poets in the past that he loved so much, Virgil, Dante, Milton, Wordsworth, and Yeats. And while it's true he'll be best remembered for his prose rather than his poetry, my heart did brighten while attending Lewis's investiture in Westminster Abbey's Poet Corner on November the 22nd, 2013. He could hardly have predicted that 50 years to the day of his death, a stone honoring him would be placed in the floor of the Abbey. And I think that had he been in the audience that day, he would have worn a wry, if slightly embarrassed, smile. So the collected poems of C.S. Lewis demonstrates his lifelong commitment to poetry, revealing a dedicated, determined, and passionate poet at work. So I think it's important that Lewis readers have access to his poetry.
Excellent. Well, Don, thank you very much for joining me here on the show.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
Again, this is All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. I'm William O'Flaherty. Be sure to visit EssentialCSLewis.com for a previous podcast and for links to sites mentioned in this interview, which will be in the show notes for this episode. You can also find past episodes directly where I host the audio sites at allaboutjack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled PODBEAN.com. There you can find previous episodes that I've done at the time this interview is being initially released. Recently we had interviews or a series of interviews examining C.S. Lewis versus the New Atheist. And then earlier in 2014, I actually shared a couple of programs with podcasts related to some things that I did. I spoke in Tennessee about C.S. Lewis as preacher, and then I also did a short talk at Taylor University where I discussed quotes falsely attributed to C.S. Lewis. I have other interviews with Dr. Devin Brown, Dr. Alistair McGrath, and many others. So again, be sure to visit either EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com.